Good afternoon to our listeners. I'm Gabriel Kamanzuli, and we'll be conducting today's program, It's Debatable. This is a weekly discussion of current affairs in its second series. The program is run by the Department of International Relations, and students participate by giving us their opinion on subjects of their interest. Today's students are Miroslava Bancheva, Tatiana Apostolova, who are both from Bulgaria, and Veronica Mitchum from the US. Today's subject is whether there should be an effort to promote more women in international affairs. After the break, we'll have a short intervention by Ms. Rainila Vera, a women's rights activist. Dr. Carmen Samud will introduce today's subject.
Until the end of the Cold War, Orthodox studies of international relations mainly focused on issues of high politics like diplomacy, security, war, and violence between states. These made reference to statesmen and soldiers who were assumed to be men. In almost all cases, states were male-dominated and often presented as masculine constructs. Some claim that the construction of the public sphere as the domain of the male citizen dates back to the emergence of the Athenian polis. Then, men were able to go about their public and citizen duties because women and slaves provided for their physical and emotional needs in the private space of the home. Women's experiences of and ideas about world politics were rarely deemed to be important. In international relations literature, until recently, women's roles as citizens, their role and experiences of wartime, and their efforts in peace movements were often sidelined and outrightly ignored. It was relatively recent that feminist analysts questioned state power and tried to explain women's systematic invisibility in world politics. Until recently, a woman's most visible role in diplomacy was limited to that of the diplomatic wife, who elegantly served her nation behind the scenes and without much acknowledgement as she greased the wheels of male-led diplomatic relations. In spite of the spread of universal franchise throughout the 20th century and an increase in the number of women in diplomatic services, there are still very few women holding positions in internationally significant ministerial portfolios or those of head of states. Some authors explain that candidates for elite offices are traditionally recruited from leadership roles in political parties, local or regional government, unions, interest groups, business, the civil service career, and the military. Women are often at a disadvantage in these traditional routes to power, as they generally have less access to leadership experience within the institutions. Although some women did follow the political party stepping stones to power, advancing through local, regional, and national successes, as in the case of Margaret Thatcher and Golda Meir, authors Spike Peterson and Runyon found other traits of women who managed to obtain power. They are generally well-educated, often in non-traditional areas. They are often members of political families. They also tend to come from backgrounds of relative wealth and privilege, and they rose to power during transitional periods when a compromise and conciliatory candidate was sought, as in the case of Corazon Aquino in the Philippines. Or else they were chosen when grassroots issues gained prominence and prompted a search for a fresh leadership, as in the case of Norway's Gro Harlem Brundtland and the Irish president Mary Robinson. However, coming from prominent families, acting as male surrogates and symbolizing national unity in conflict-ridden situations, these women then had to establish themselves as leaders in their own right. As women acquired a louder voice in national politics, international organizations like the United Nations came under greater pressure to reform in order to allow more say and visibility to women. Yet, there are very few women in upper-level managerial positions in the United Nations, especially in the political and security fields. Moreover, women are underrepresented among the highest-ranking diplomats in national delegations to the United Nations, even if they may be more or less well-represented among the lower ranks of diplomatic missions. Pressures by women's lobby groups mounted during the campaign to appoint a new Secretary General, which took place last year. Upon his appointment, Ban Ki-moon picked a woman, Tanzania's Foreign Minister Asha Rose Migiro, as the UN Deputy Secretary General. The United Nations organized 4 widely cited world conferences on women, one in Mexico City, another in Copenhagen, a follow-up in Nairobi, and then the biggest conference ever that took place in Beijing. Among the areas of critical concern, the Beijing conference identified the following priority matters: the persistent and the increasing burden of poverty on women, unequal access to education and training, unequal access to healthcare, violence against women, the effect of conflict on women, inequality in economic structures and policies, inequality in the sharing of power and decision-making at all levels, and the stereotyping of women and women's inequality in the access and participation in all the communication systems, especially in the media. Gender issues may be a late arrival in international affairs, however, it is now a key area of concern. The former Secretary General of the United Nations, Kofi Annan, pointed out, "If we accept that in any society, gender equality is more than a goal in itself, if we believe that the empowerment of women is a vital means to meeting the challenge of sustainable development, if we argue that the participation of women is a requirement in building good governance, if we insist that the rights of women are a precondition for the effectiveness of humanitarian assistance, if we are convinced of all these things in relation to all the societies we are trying to help in this world, then how can we fail to apply this conviction in our own society, in our own house?"
Thanks, Dr. Kamsamud. After that introduction, Bruno Parsons will read some quotes from newspapers and articles that concern today's debate.
Thank you. My first quote is by Gertrude Mongella from Tanzania. She's the Secretary General of the U.S. Women have always struggled with their manfolk for the abolition of slavery, the liberation of countries from colonialism, and the attainment of peace. It is now the turn of man to join women in their struggle for equality. My last quote is by Margaret Thatcher. She goes on to say, "If you want anything said, ask a man. If you want anything done, ask a woman."
Thanks, Bruno. When considering the different cultures we have in the world and the present situation, do you think the world is ready for women to be protagonists in international relations?
Yes, I believe that the world is ready for women in international affairs, and women who have been in politics are there to prove it. More and more women are being elected to govern their countries. This means that the world is not just ready to accept women as leaders, but actually chooses them before male candidates. We see such examples in different parts of the world. Let's take Malta, for example. The 3rd president of the Republic of Malta was a woman. Agata Barbara was elected in 1982 and served for 5 years. Another example is Benazir Bhutto. She was twice elected Prime Minister of Pakistan. The same goes for the well-known Indira Gandhi, who was India's Prime Minister, also twice. Margaret Thatcher is possibly the greatest example of all. She was repeatedly elected a Prime Minister for 21 years, and she's perhaps the most significant British politician in recent political history, also one of the most loved ones. Female Prime Ministers of Israel, Turkey, Bangladesh, France, Poland, Bulgaria are just a few more examples showing that different regions, religions, and cultures of the world are open for women in international affairs.
Well, some parts of the world might be ready for political women, but others are definitely way behind. Cultural differences, religion, and other social factors also often serve as determiners when it comes to perceiving women in political positions. Let's take the Middle East as an example. For 40 years, women in Kuwait have fought for their political rights. They finally won their right to vote in May 2005. What else is interesting about Kuwait is that it has invested a lot in free education and health for both male and female citizens. But it is discriminating against women by having only men participate in political life. Kuwaiti men were allowed to vote, run various political offices, they were appointed to cabinet positions and participated in country's decision-making process. And on the other hand, the perfect role for women according to traditionalist Islamists, is to stay at home, raise children, take care of the house, and be subservient to their husbands. And all that under the pretense that it is dictated by religious requirements. Women who oppose this perception were terrorized psychologically and socially. Yes, it is true that Kuwaiti women displayed determination, but do you really think that the fight is over yet? Unfortunately, it is not that easy. In fact, the entire Middle East and North Africa face this challenge.
You both are correct, but we can't say that the world is either ready or not ready, because it's kind of in the middle. As mentioned before, countries like Malta, the United Kingdom, and the United States have had and do have women in leadership, but also, as mentioned, Islamic countries don't have women in leadership. So on the whole, the world is in the middle, and some places are ready and some aren't. It's just a process.
Okay, so according to your view, why women should be promoted in the international sphere?
The answer to the question why is simple. Because women's lives are controlled and influenced by international affairs and politics just as much as men's lives. This means that women have the right to and should take part in decision-making. Women constantly struggle within a world of male-dominated politics. They were brought up to believe that they have no control and power over their lives, their bodies, their environment. Social institutions such as the family, school, churches, governments, the media, all of them promote stereotypes of men and women within society. Women have been seen as followers and supporters, not leaders or equal partners in their homes and outside them. Obviously, the situation has changed during the past decades, and at least to a certain extent, and nowadays women take such places in international affairs that used to be inaccessible for them. Let's take foreign diplomacy, as it takes a major place in international relations. It used to be conducted mainly by white males, but over the past years, women play a substantial role in foreign diplomacy and have shown that they are able to deal with political problems just as good as men.
Yes, I also believe that women should be promoted and encouraged into international affairs. Throughout history, many feminists argue that they deserve equal rights and privileges as their male counterparts. Liberal feminists, for example, believe that the responsibilities of both sexes regarding power must be distributed equally. Some people might say women are more peaceful than men by nature and they won't be objective. Well, liberal feminists disagree. The prevention of women from engaging in IR, it is simply losing the contribution of half of the population to the society. That doesn't mean that we should transform the international system fundamentally. They are just simply asking for end of gender discrimination, especially regarding the status quo. After all, according to liberal feminists, women have the same mental capacity as men do. But there is also another aspect. Difference feminism, for example, rejects the idea that men and women are the same. They believe that men and women are two different human beings with a different biology, emotions, and experience. Difference feminists believe that because of their experience with human relations, women will be actually better decision-making and conflict resolutions, the same way as men will be better in physical fights because of their superiority in size and strength. In that sense, they argue that women will be more suitable to take positions into peacemaking, and that's why more women should be promoted into mainstream politics.
I absolutely agree that women should be encouraged to be involved in politics and international relations and affairs, but it has to remain a democratic process. If we force it and cause everything to move too quickly in putting too many women in power or too quickly, it could cause political and domestic problems, as well as running the risk of discriminating against men and causing problems in that way, as well as meddling in the democratic process. We need to focus on doing it in a very democratic manner, but definitely women should be more involved.
Discussion will continue with the phone note just after a short break. You gotta be fortunate. You gotta be lucky now. Try to reason me. They could. Welcome back to the second part of the program. Today we are discussing the role of women in international relations. On the phone we have Ms. Rina Laivira. You follow closely the UN International Conferences on Women. Did the United Nations International Conferences for Women bring more gender equality?
The issue of the United Nations International Conference on Women and to what extent it influenced gender equality is definitely very positive, because it was since 1976 that governments, especially governments and NGOs, started working more concretely on definite programs of action in 76 and then again in 85 and in 95 and to the year 2000. We have a review of actions and development that took place in the previous 10 years. And then, on considering and examining the results of what was happening in the social, political, economic, in the economic field as regards gender equality, we have another program, a renewed program of action to bring about further action and further improvements. This brought about, obviously, a lot of research. Research with regard to the position of women in society. In the beginning, we in the 70s and 80s, we used to compare women, the participation of women in the different sectors in society, to women in other countries, between one country and another. Then there was a development, and we were seeing the change by looking at the position of women and men in different sectors of societies, because the emphasis was on full participation of women and men, and therefore we needed to look at where the men were and where the women were in the social, in the political, and the economic field. As you know, we have seen a lot of progress, not just within the UN, even within the Council of Europe, countries, participating countries, within the European Union. The position of women has improved greatly, and this can be seen through the research that has been taking place, has improved with regard to employment, with regard to wages, although to date we are not yet on a par, women and men are not up to date, not on a par with men. However, significant changes have been made, even with regard to political sphere, for example. Again, we still have far to go, and this issue is still being discussed even in Brussels. On the 8th of March, we had an international seminar with the EU commissioners taking part, discussing the lacuna in the political sphere, because in most countries, women fall behind the representation in national parliaments. So there is still a lot of work to do. However, it must be stated clearly, with no doubt at all, that the United Nations has, since the 70s, pushed the agenda forward when international conferences started to take place, gathering women from women and men from national governments, international entities, as well as NGOs, to meet, to discuss, to look at issues, obviously based on research, and research would then lead on to question the realities in the different countries and develop objectives and aims that needed to be reached and targets in order to improve the situation. Obviously, that meant, again, finding the financial backing for these programs to be implemented. And then we saw also this development, these meetings helped also women to become, to hone their skills at international level in these international meetings, to further lobby the gender equality issues, both locally at national level and also at international entities.
Thanks, Ms. Rina Laivira, for your comments. Back to our debate. What sort of initiatives were taken to promote women in international relations? Were they successful?
In the past 30 years, initiatives to promote equality between women and men were taken in nearly all Western European countries. The integration of women into all levels of political institutions is present, and a lot of women are already involved in political decision-making,
and the formation of the political agenda in general. Still, there are efforts that should be made in order to promote more women in international relations. For example, efforts should be made to raise women's political awareness through education and training, and this could be achieved through equal political socialization for both girls and boys from early childhood. Women should organize and establish networks among them, achieve unity, receive support and advice from women who are already in politics. I believe that a lot has been done and a lot is still to be done in order to integrate women in a world of politics, which is still dominated by men. But the world has always needed women, so such integration is inevitable.
Yes, that's true. Increasing the level of female participation in decision-making bodies require well-developed strategies and information. An example how more women should be promoted for international affairs is the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance. It provides information on how to advance gender and democracy issues in general and how to promote the participation of women in political life in particular. It has published a series of handbooks entitled Women in Parliament, Beyond Numbers, and their findings have been distributed through a series of country workshops in Latin America, Africa and Asia. The Center for American Women and Politics is another example. It is a university-based research, education and public service center. Its mission is to promote greater knowledge and understanding about women's participation in politics and government and to enhance women's influence and leadership in public life. It works to increase the impact of women in politics and to make political women's leadership more effective. The figures show that there was a progress in the past few years, but this progress is still minimal. In 2005, the rate of female representation stands at nearly 16% globally. That means that the idea of equality is still distant and more efforts should be made to promote women in IR.
Another example of the sort of steps that have been taken toward involving more women is the United Nations Fourth World Conference on Women, which was held in Beijing in 1995. It was the Action for Equality, Development, and Peace. This is one of the largest efforts globally made toward promoting women's equality issues. One of their platforms for action was Women in Power and Decision Making. And their strategic objectives for this platform was to take measures to ensure women's equal access and full participation in power structures and decision making, and to increase women's capacity to participate in decision making and leadership. These strategies directly address the need for women in leadership roles in international relations. And when this was reviewed in Beijing Plus 5, these strategies were reviewed, they saw that steps had been made and progress had been made toward improving the status and role of women in society, but no great breakthrough had been made to get women into the decision-making and political structures on the national and international levels. So it's going to be a continual process to get women into leadership roles, and it's just a process that's going to take time. Change is never easy, and it doesn't come quickly.
Thanks. With that, we have concluded our today's debate. Thanks, Veronika Michim, Miroslava Bancheva and Tatrina Postolova, for giving us your comments in today's debate, and Bruno Parsons for research on quotes. Thanks also Dr. Carmen Samud for her contribution. I hope you enjoyed today's debate. Join us for the next program today week that will discuss the humanitarian crisis in Darfur.